Good evening and welcome to the Salmon Arm Chamber of Commerce Provincial All Candidates Forum. I'm Shelley Desitel and I'm honored to serve as your moderator for this evening. If everyone could please silence or turn off your cell phones to avoid any disruptions this evening, that would be lovely. Before we begin, the Chamber would like to acknowledge that we are gathered on the traditional and unceded territory of the Shikapa people. We extend our gratitude for the opportunity to learn, work, and live on these lands. The Chamber of Commerce is a membership-driven organization that advocates on behalf of its members, serving as the collective voice of our business community. I'd like to take a moment to recognize that our Executive Director, Christine Johns-Barber, who will be managing the timer this evening. Christine has asked me to express her heartfelt thanks and to both the candidates and the audience for participating in this important forum. We also want to thank our board members in attendance this evening. We have Taylor Bean, Nathan Grieve, Greg Cowan, and Danielle Tai in attendance with us this evening. Questions for tonight's Q&A were collected from the community in advance. The candidates have not seen the questions, and they will be randomly selected out of a basket that I have here.
We don't need to ask questions?
No questions from the floor this evening.
Oh my God, you are kidding me.
We will begin by introducing the candidates for the local riding in this provincial election, with opening remarks following an order determined by a random draw.
No, not okay. I can learn to get to know you guys and ask you questions. I have every right to know what you're going to do for my land right now.
There was an opportunity to ask questions prior to the event. You can have the opportunity to ask questions after the event if you so choose. Each candidate will answer 15 questions with 1 minute allocated to each response. To conclude, the candidates will give their closing statements in reverse order from their introductions. Once the final candidate has spoken, I will close this evening and we kindly ask that you exit the venue in an orderly fashion. So we are going to start with the introductions. Each candidate will have 1 minute to do their introductions. Nope, sorry, 3 minutes for their introductions. And we will start our introductions this evening with Sherry Roy.
Good evening. Thank you for coming tonight. My name is Sherry Roy. I've lived in this area for over 40 years. My husband and I live in Armstrong. We have four children and eight grandchildren. And like so many British Columbians that I've spoken to over the last several years, we're very concerned about the future of what the future looks for our children around the governing of this province and in particular our communities. Everywhere we look in the province, the government is creating more problems that are not resolved, and yet our taxes are the highest they've ever been. And it doesn't seem that's not going to stop, and we just don't seem to be addressing or resolving, even though we keep giving more money. So we have, you know, whether it be the economy, housing, healthcare, homelessness, addiction, parental rights, education, farming issues, the education, being proactive and ready to address the needs that we have addressing fires, and many more. The political politics has many broken promises, and I'm sorry, I'm just referring to my notes. The political politics and their broken promises are too far removed from the needs of the people. And I believe that, as many others do in British Columbia, it's time to resurrect a more direct relationship with community so our voices are heard and acted upon. And I'm excited to be a direct link for you as an independent MLA where I'll bring forward your concerns. I will vote in the legislature for you and not for the party needs. It's time for change. Thank you. Now we have David William.
What party? Can you say your party too when you identify yourself? I can't see the.
Yeah, thank you all for coming out tonight. It's great to see such a good crowd and everybody take the time.
What party?
Take the time to come out for this evening. I'm David William. I'm with the Conservative Party of British Columbia.
Thank you.
And we're hoping to bring change.
Yes.
A little bit about. Thank you very much. Hey, a little better. Anyways, a little bit about myself. I also have lived in the area for a very long time. My background is I started off in construction, in HVAC, and I transitioned into real estate, and I did that for a few years, and I moved on to work for BC Investment. So if I look familiar, I've probably been in your house. I used to do assessments all through the North Okanagan and the Shuswap. And when they decided to close the office in Vernon, I actually went to work for the insurance industry. And currently, I do loss control for the insurance industry, appraising high-value homes and farms. And so I'm very familiar with the whole region and all the different communities within our riding. As for personal note, I was married for 38 years. My wife passed away in 2016. I'm currently with a superwoman who I've been with for 4 years. We currently live in White Lake. And so we understand all the intricacies of the area and all the different problems we have in this riding. Whether you be a business, whether you be a farmer, whether you work elsewhere, having to go outside the province, I understand. And we want to change things. If we figure that it's time for change. As for the party, we came from grassroots, basically from nowhere, as you know. We are not the opposition party, we are not the governing party, but in the little time that we've been around, we've probably made more changes in the province than the parties that are currently in government or were in opposition. And just think what we could do if we were in government. Some of the things we have to change is obviously affordability, healthcare, wildfire services need to be reviewed, forest management, which goes hand in hand with forest services, and of course there's lots of other little things that we have to deal with. And so we want to bring back affordability to the average family, and we want people staying in this province, and we want small business and farms to succeed. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And next we will have Sylvia Lindgren.
Good evening. I'm Sylvia Lindgren, the DC NDP candidate. I want to thank you all for coming and for caring about the democratic process. I also want to acknowledge that we're meeting on the land of the Squep people who have lived here since time immemorial. I grew up exploring the stunning landscapes of northern Canada, where our family vacations were filled with camping and boating adventures, and these experiences taught me important skills and life lessons. Since 1994, I've called Salmon Arm home, where my husband and I have raised three children. We both work in the school district, and in our free time, we love camping, sailing, and embarking on adventures in our Volkswagen van, creating cherished memories with our three grandchildren. I hold a degree in education, with a major in supporting individuals with diverse abilities, and a minor in outdoor education. For over 40 years, I've dedicated my career to healthcare and education, working with Interior Health, BC Ambulance, and School District 83. As a longtime union member, I spent 9 years on their executive board, including 5 as the president of QP523. My work is defined by my commitment to availability, advocacy, and accountability. I was elected to municipal government in 2018 here in Salmon Arm, and I'm currently serving my second term. During this time, I've gained valuable insights into governance and effective strategies for collaboration. I've built strong relationships with my fellow councillors and several MLAs, witnessing firsthand the power of working together. In fact, During my early years on council, the most frequent feedback I received from both our councillors and from others from other regions was how positive their experience had been working with this BC NDP government, highlighting the collaboration and respect that have led to successful outcomes. In my role on council, I've played a key part in enhancing public safety, expanding our local housing supply, and developing active transportation routes. And as the chair of the Environmental Advisory Committee for 6 years, I've introduced or supported initiatives focused on reducing plastic waste, protecting our water resources, lowering corporate greenhouse gases, and preserving our local tree canopy. Looking ahead, my priorities include addressing climate change, increasing the availability of housing, and reducing the use of pesticides. If elected as your MLA, I'll work hard on your priorities. I recognize that recovering from the significant cuts made from the BC United, formerly Liberals, is a difficult journey, but this government is moving us in the right direction. The BC NDP have successfully launched or completed 92 initiatives in our riding alone, including investments in children and families through affordability fund and supported homes for community members, four-laning the Trans-Canada Highway to enhance safety, and through infrastructure and active transportation grants. I'm dedicated to balancing these priorities with effective actions. We cannot afford to return to the underfunded services of the past, which is what John Rustad's government did before and has promised to do again. There's much work to be done, but I'm prepared and I'm looking forward to fighting for you in Victoria.
Thank you. And next we have Jed Weeb.
Hi, I would also like to thank you all for coming. And I would like to acknowledge that we're on the unceded territory of the Secwepemc people. And for me, that's a call to action. I want to uplift Indigenous government. I've lived in the Shuswap all my life, and I'm a farmer. And that's why I'm running for the BC Green Party in this election. I'm right in the middle of harvest right now, and during harvest, I've been picking my berries. I'm an elderberry farmer with my partner, Louise. I've had a lot of time to think about this election. And what I've been thinking about is how scientists have been telling us for decades that we need to transition from fossil fuels in order to have a livable future. I've lived my entire adult life as sustainably as I possibly could as an individual, meanwhile watching the government consistently fail to tackle climate change. Now experts are saying there's still hope for us to prevent the worst case scenario, but we need to give a wartime effort. And we need to do it right now. And I want to be part of that team because I want to make sure it gets done. So that's why I'm running. I'm running so that the young people in our communities have someone on the ballot that gives them hope that they can have a livable future. In this election, you can vote for a party that denies climate change and will do nothing about it. You can vote for a party that gives lip service to the climate crisis but is beholden to lobbyists and will cave to their demands to cancel the carbon tax. Or you can vote for the only party that believes in science, listens to experts, and will take real action on climate change while supporting British Columbians with increased rebates. We will tackle the climate crisis by redirecting the NDP's massive fossil fuel subsidies into putting people first, a well-being focused platform that will provide a just transition to green jobs and will make improvements to our healthcare system, our education system, and make a monumental investment into reducing the cost of housing through investing in non-market homes, such as nonprofit residential complexes and housing co-ops. A vote for me, Jed Weeb, and the BC Greens on October 19th is a vote of hope for us to build the future that all British Columbians deserve.
Thank you, Jed. And Greg Clune.
Thank you, and thank you very much. Welcome, everyone. I'd like to thank the Chamber of Commerce for holding this tonight and giving you people here that are obviously your diehard political people a chance to hear from your candidates, so welcome. I guess what we're here to do tonight is tell a little bit about ourselves and bring you up to speed on to how we got here till today. I was born in Regina, Saskatchewan. Yes, I know. Lived there for only 11 months, but that 11 months allowed me to learn the game of curling, as a matter of fact. It was so important part of the fabric there that when I was born, my mom and dad did a coin toss And my mom got to name me, and my dad had the hammer in the first end. That's how important that was. We ended up in Calgary. I was there for 11 years. What that taught me is that I never, ever, ever wanted to live in a large community. I wanted to live in a place that was just like the region that we ended up in when my dad bought Sullivan's Bakery in Enderby in 1975. So that's where I actually went straight to school. I learned about customer service. I learned about what the community needed. We were a regional business. We were on the highway, so we got to meet people that traveled back and forth. We delivered bread from Revelstoke through to Kamloops and Kelowna. And as a 16-year-old, I took a little Fargo van. That was my first real job besides sweeping up the bakery. And drove the Shuswap. Went to all the little markets and resort stores. And so got to fall in love with where we live now. So super happy to be here. The lifetime of being involved in that business, when we did the location that we're in today, I couldn't believe that the city that we're in, it was that difficult to actually invest in the community. So I ended up running and getting on city council just to see, is this how it's supposed to be? And there was challenges and they, we've managed to eliminate some red tape along the way, but there's still too much left. And I think that's our affordability issues and our housing, for sure, is trapped in red tape. So I was at the point in my life where I was just thinking about my kids and what their future looked like and their friends, and realized the challenges that they saw and the lack of opportunity. So put my name forward. I'm running as an independent, and thank you.
It is now time for a question and answer period. Before we get started, though, I would like to remind everyone that every candidate up here is due the same respect as each one, regardless of what your opinions or your beliefs are. They're up here to tell what their party is offering. Anyone who is disrespectful or disruptful too many times will be asked to leave this evening, because everyone is afforded the same opportunities to talk. Each candidate will be provided 1 minute to answer the question given. Each candidate will also have the opportunity to answer every question that is provided. We'll be keeping track of time and will indicate time remaining by raising a yellow card at the 30-second mark and a red card at the 10-second mark. And I will cut you off at the 1 minute mark. We ask that all candidates assist us by being respectful of their time allotments. Questions were submitted by community members via email and our website to the Chamber administration. Thank you to those community members who took the time to submit their questions. Due to the amount of submissions and array of topics, in the interest of allowing each candidate enough time to respond to the questions, we have elected to ask a total of 15 questions. All questions have been printed on slips of paper and will be randomly drawn. Candidates will answer the questions in an order determined by a random draw. Tomorrow, the Chamber will distribute a list of questions asked this evening to the candidates, providing them with the opportunity to respond individually through their media sources. So we will begin the question period. So the first question I'm drawing this evening from the basket, the order for the first one will be Sylvia, Sherry, Greg, Jed, and David. The first question this evening: due to the climate change and ongoing wildfire flood disasters, many U.S. states regulate home insurance premium increases. What are your views on statutory BC authorities accepting similar responsibilities? And I will actually pass the question to the table just in case you need to refresh.
So I think that a lot of things are related to climate change now. I think that the cost of everything went up. Partially because of climate change, partially because we had a global pandemic, and people are looking for ways to make life more affordable. Sometimes the government has a role in regulating the cost of things, and sometimes, because we're a capitalist society, we allow the market to regulate those things. So often we look to the United States, I think, for answers, for leadership, and sometimes they get it right and sometimes they get it wrong. So I think that a Made in Canada plan is probably more realistic for us, and what that looks like I think is yet to be determined.
Thank you. And Sherry? I too believe that that we need to start taking responsibility from a local level, and allow our citizens to address these issues from a local level. I think we need to look at the difference between pollution and climate change and how we've gotten here in the first place. A lot of information needs to be decided from us as residents, and I don't like when we do mandates from corporations or political parties. Thank you. Greg?
Great question. I honestly wish that, we're in such a global world now that unfortunately your insurance companies just treat us as, again, a global entity, and I think they need to come back and go region by region. If you've owned a home and it's currently insured and you're trying to either purchase, sell your home and purchase another one in the area, you 100% should get insurance. It shouldn't be a question of, well, you're 150 kilometers from some fire somewhere. They need to look at each individual community, and they should be serving us, not the other way around. We're saying sorry, you're good luck.
Yeah. Thank you. Jed?
Yeah, so our platform is a platform that is a well-being center platform. We want to create the conditions for people to thrive, resilient communities, flourishing natural world, and to make the government more transparent and participatory. So when it comes to this question, I don't know the specific policy that the BC Greens has on our platform for this question, but it sounds like it's a cost of living question to me. And what we're gonna do to address the cost of living is we're gonna create the conditions for people to thrive by ensuring people have access to essential services like healthcare, education, and childcare, reliable and adequate public transit, affordable housing, and a strong social safety net. Climate change is going to make our lives more and more expensive if we don't address it, and this is a great question.
Thank you. And just a reminder to the candidates to hold the microphone up to your mouth so everyone can hear you. And lastly, we have David.
As most of you know, I actually work in the industry. I believe we're a free market party, so we believe that more competition will bring down rates. The thing is, what we cannot allow is monopolies.
Yes. Well done. Thank you. So our next question will be answered in the order of Greg, David, Jed, Sherry, and Sylvia. So the question is, all political parties at all levels of government preach about the need for affordable housing. Their actions, however, are to institute building codes, red tape, and regulations that make it absolutely impossible to build an affordable home. Why?
Why is a great question. I think if you want affordable housing, absolutely you have to make it affordable. The red tape, the incentives that are not created to create housing. We know we're short 4 million homes in Canada alone. Yet we're building, in the 200,000 to 300,000 a year, and that's just not enough. And there's not enough options either. We also need affordable homes for young people that, don't have stainless steel appliances and don't have marble. So there is those facilities just need to be built, and the market will dictate.
And how are you
going
to do that?
Thank you. David?
The question is why. We don't know why. The thing is, we need to cut regulations, we need to cut the red tape. What we need to do is make it easier to build and have more people building homes by having the right people in the province and right people in the country that can actually build the homes. Make land available and bring down the costs.
Thank you. Jed?
So we at the BC Greens believe that housing is a universal, fundamental right. The housing crisis is driven by speculation, insufficient non-market housing, and a lack of regulation to protect renters. So we will make a monumental investment in non-market housing run by nonprofits and co-ops. For example, my sister lives in a nonprofit housing. So the nonprofit built the housing and they rent it out to people for a portion of their income. So we will also implement vacancy control and we will be constructing 26,000 units of non-market housing annually. And that's how we're going to tackle the high cost of housing.
Thank you. Sherry? As many feel the same, I've got two sons that are living on our property because not only can they not afford to buy a home, they can't afford to rent one. And I think what it really comes down to is that we need transparency and accountability. We need to know where the money's going. We're building a number of housing now that's still unaffordable. And I think when it comes down to it is there's taxes being paid, there's money going into the government, but what we don't know is where the money's going. And I think that we need to be transparent and accountable, and once we know that, then we can fix this problem. How did Canada get here in the first place? And these are questions that we all need to be asking.
Thank you. And lastly, Sylvia.
Thank you. So affordable housing is one of the key components of the BC NDP plan. They've been building houses, they've been reducing the availability to speculators, they've been restricting short-term rentals to get houses back on the market, because in a free market, the availability, increased availability, will reduce the costs. The increases to the housing, the code, are meant to balance growth with protecting the environment, protecting, cutting greenhouse gases, setting us up for the future. So we need to find that balance. There are good reasons to increase lower greenhouse gases. And as long as we keep building homes, which is the plan of the BC NDP to put 300,000 new homes on the market in the next 10 years, then that will bring the prices down.
Thank you, Sylvia. So we're on to our third question. The order will be David, Jed, Sherry, Sylvia, and Greg. As a riding in the interior, we're vastly outnumbered in the legislature by seats from the Lower Mainland. How do you plan to advocate for programs and policies that benefit those living outside of metropolitan areas?
Another very good question. Far too long, the interior has been underrepresented by and dominated by the coast. What we need to do, we need somebody who has a strong voice and advocates, somebody that's within government, that has the ear of the premier, and can actually make decisions within that caucus. And I believe I'm that person. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I'm a lifelong Shuswap resident, and I will always represent Shuswap's best interests to the best of my ability. As I said before, our platform is a well-being-centered platform. We want to create the conditions for British Columbians to thrive everywhere in the province. So that includes the interior. And one of the things that is in our platform is we want to provide free transportation across the province and prioritize local, rural routes. We want to have resilient communities, and we're going to work towards that.
Thank you. Sherry?
As an independent candidate, you're going to find that I'm going to come back to the same questions. It's the transparency and accountability and where the money is going to start with. We're already paying high taxes as it is, and we keep being asked to pay more, but no one's accountable about where it's going and transparency on where things are now. I think we need to get to the bottom of that. And once we do, then we can address the local issues that we have.
Thank you, Leslie. Oh, Sylvia, not Leslie, Sylvia. Thank you. I think in the beginning I said that I had a spreadsheet with 92 initiatives that have happened in this riding alone. That's not a party that's representing the Lower Mainland. That's a party that's been investing in hospitals, schools, four-laning our highway, replacing the Brunn Bridge, building affordable housing, setting up supports locally for people who are vulnerable and have mental health and addictions issues, building the new bridge west of town, putting in a medical center in Sycamuse, adding doctors in our region. Matter of fact, two people on my campaign team were just able to get a frontline physician or healthcare provider, which 3 years ago couldn't have happened. Because in the past, we weren't adding the things that we needed, but we are now, and it's here.
And Greg.
As my time as an elected official when I was a counselor, and then again when I was the mayor, an election happens, seven new people enter the room, and you just have to work with respect. There's 93 ridings in British Columbia. There's, you know, the rural suburban divide, they call it, but it's with respect of all 93 people that are representing the province that you find out that the province is one place.
Thank you. We're now on to our fourth question. The order will be Jed, Sylvia, David, Greg, and Sherry. There has been much criticism on how the forest industry has not been managed properly under the current government. What are the goals for the forest industry for your government, and what does proper forest management mean to you?
What kind of got me into this is I started canvassing for Neighbors United on the campaign trying to raise support for the biodiversity and ecosystem health law, which is a law that would prioritize biodiversity and ecosystem health in, as a top forestry management decision. So I have a little bit of a warm spot in my heart for that, and it turns out the Green Party feels the same way. If we manage our forests right, we can continue for generations to have good, high-paying forestry jobs. Just like I had, I worked for 7 years in the silviculture industry. I just think, and the Green Party thinks, we just need to manage it well to make sure that it is sustainable. And part of that is taking care of old growth forests because they have unique and special biodiversity and endangered species that we need in order, as humans, to survive on this planet.
Thank you. Sylvia?
Thanks. Thanks for that question. Right now isn't a great time in BC for forestry. We've seen that, we know. But the BC NDP have been working towards a sustainable management of the forestry industry in BC for a long time now. They have been setting aside protected areas so that old growth forests are not cut down. And they've increased the number of logs that are processed in BC rather than shipping whole logs offshore. They changed the legislation for building tall buildings out of wood at the very beginning of their tenure. Protecting trees is something that's really important to me, but I know that the economy in BC often runs on resources, and forestry is one of them. So it's really important to me and to the BC NDP to manage our forests sustainably so that we have trees and we have a forestry industry far into the future.
Thank you. David?
I believe the forest has been managed poorly for a long time. And our leader, John Rustad, as you know, has a forestry background, and he's very passionate about it. We recently came out with a new platform where we're going to be changing the way stumpages, and we're also 20% is going to be harvested and maintained by Indigenous, who probably can do a far better job than the way it's being done now. And as for that, we would review all forest practices. And that would solve part of the problem when it comes to fires and other economy issues, related issues like sawdust closing down. Thank you.
Thank you. Greg.
I think the key is to actively manage a sustainable forest. Right now, we're not seeing any act of anything. The fires that we've had are creating crazy emissions that anybody that's here concerned about the climate, that would be one of the first things to do is get in and manage the forest to reduce those events.
Thank you, and Sherry.
Okay, and I agree, we need to get back to managing our forests the way we did in the past and cleaning them up. We need to stop spraying our forests with glyphosate and killing our trees. We need to stop cutting our trees down and making them into pellets so we can send it to the UK for them to heat their homes. There's a lot of things, if we paid attention to what's going on with the pollution and cleaned that up, then we would be able to address our forest needs and what's going on right now. Do you want me to repeat what I just said?
They're on right now.
Hello? Okay. Yes, I believe that we need to get back to managing our forests without the you know, chemicals like glyphosate that are killing our trees. We need to get the chemicals, the pollution addressed. We also, in case people aren't aware, we're cutting down trees to make into pellets to send to the UK for the UK to heat their homes. And these are issues that most British Columbians probably aren't aware of. It's when we address these kinds of things, then you know, we can clean up the forests and then everything else will take care of itself.
And we are sending our lover to lumber to China.
Thank you very much. So we're on to question five. Our order will be Sherry, Greg, Sylvia, David, and Jed. What is your plan to implement screening for children, youth, in our health and school system to identify precursors to addiction? Does your party have a plan to work at the source of the drug addiction problems we face today rather than trying to fix it?
It's interesting that this question comes up because I come from the background, I'm a family counselor behavior specialist, and I left my career in 2004 because what I see is that we medicate children with psychotropic medications without we ever addressing the need for health and wellness. You know, food is important. What we feed our children, making sure there's no chemicals in our food makes a big difference in what's happening to our children, and it starts at infancy. So we need to get back to health and wellness and out of the chemical models and the pharmaceutical industry that controls so much is what's going on with our children. And I think when we do that, we raise healthy children.
Thank you. Greg?
There's plenty of pressure on young people these days. I mean, between the internet, social media, all of that just inundates them like crazy. I think that the real solution is the parents. Stay involved in your kids' lives forever.
Sylvia.
So my background for the last 5 years has been working in an alternate school where many attendees come from backgrounds of poverty and intergenerational trauma. And intergenerational trauma is the biggest precursor to addiction, actually, childhood trauma. The way that you deal with that is you increase people's standard of living. You make sure that people are able to get the food that they need, the mental health supports that they need. You make sure that they are getting good quality preschool at a price that parents can afford, and that when they hit the school system, they're getting fully supported by well-trained and well-educated support staff. That's what I do for a living. So, yeah, it has nothing to do with drugs. Thanks very much.
Thank you. David?
First, let's start with getting the drugs off the street. Then second off, We have to give parents some of the control back, so that the parents can turn around, even if their child has an addiction back, they're getting into involuntary care. And we need to have rehab facilities available so that people are quickly treated. And last but least, well, I think that we all have to be a community and we have to look after one another and make sure that the kids are taken care of.
Yes.
So the short answer is yes, our party does have a specific policy in our platform for addressing children and drugs in school. So we will make sure that every school has mandatory evidence-based education for students about the dangers of about drugs. And we also want to see every single school have adequate mental health care providers for the children and the staff, because we know how that's connected. So our platform is completely evidence-based. Every single policy that we have has been tested somewhere else and is informed by experts.
Thank you. We are on to our sixth question. We will start with David, Sylvia, Jed, Greg, and Sherry. What is your plan to support the increase of school support staff to lessen the burden on teachers, reduce class sizes, and give attention to children, youth, who are in desperate need of extra attention due to mental health, learning disabilities?
I do agree the education system is underfunded. We definitely have to have more teacher assistance, and there should be special needs for the children that need the extra attention. Every child has the right to learn, and that's something that we would have to look at when it comes to funding. But in order to get funding, we have to have a good economy so that more money can go into education. Thank you.
Thank you. Sylvia?
There's a couple of parts to that question. One is about identifying kids in schools that need extra supports. And that comes with adequate testing, adequate funding for testing, making sure that kids are identified early so that they don't have to wait till grade 3 or 4 before the supports are finally provided for them. So that's a funding issue. Those supports are, they come through the form of education assistants and special ed teachers, learning resource teachers in the school system. And again, after 20 years of working in the school system here, I think I have some experience with that. So recently, this school district actually cut the support staff and as well as custodial. So it's clear that the funding model needs to be upgraded and people need to be able to get the supports that they need. Thank you. Jed.
So as I said before, we have a well-being centered platform. We're going to measure outcomes by how it increases well-being of Colombians. And we see that we need to start with education and making sure that every single child has barriers removed that would prevent them from succeeding. And we believe that every single person has an equal right to thrive. So we want to make a big investment in increasing the amount of education assistance we have and more teachers so that we can reduce class sizes. We want to see smaller class sizes and every single child having the adequate amount of time with the teacher to be able to fully succeed.
Thank you. Greg?
I think it's going to take a big change of the way things are going. I think we should pull out all the capital projects. The province should manage the schools, the school bus, the transportation. I think the teachers, the school trustees that are elected to work with the teachers, I think children are our greatest resource. So I think why should a trustee try to figure out the drainage on a roof when she should be just focused on either or, the actual education of the children. So I think it's a matter of separating the two. The province runs and the facilities,
and then the funds that come to the school district would be for the children.
Thank you, for sure. We have the sickest generation of children that we've ever seen, and what we need to do is get back to seeing how did we get here? How come every generation gets sicker and sicker? What's the difference between now and children growing up and when I grew up? And some of the things that we're dealing with today didn't exist in the 60s. And you know, sometimes life isn't best by chemical. It comes with a healthy lifestyle, and we need to get back to teaching people how to live a healthy lifestyle, and it starts at home.
Thank you. We are now on to question number 7. The order will be Greg, Sherry, David, Sylvia, and Jed. Have you, the candidates, been vaccinated for COVID, and do they believe it should be a requirement for healthcare workers?
Thank you. I have been vaccinated, and I do not believe that the healthcare workers. I have been vaccinated, and I don't believe that the healthcare workers should have been.
Okay. I'm 66 years old, and I've never been vaccinated. It is my right to choose how I live, and I choose health and wellness.
Yes.
I personally haven't seen a medical doctor since I was 20. If health, there's a difference between health and wellness and disease sick care management. We are living in a disease sick care management for profit with big pharma directing us. It's time to educate people about health and wellness.
David?
I took the minimum. I had one vaccination, and our party and myself do not believe in mandates.
Yes.
I think it's up to the individual.
Yes. Thank you. Sylvia?
Thanks.
Yeah, let's do what you guys say. Sorry.
Are you done? Thanks. So I have been vaccinated for COVID. I've also been vaccinated for measles and chickenpox, or not chickenpox, all the childhood diseases, diphtheria. There's a good reason that people get vaccinated, because it changes your outcomes in illness. But I disagree with what Sherry said about that it has to be one or the other. You can believe in exercise and good eating and wellness and still believe in science. Because science actually supports those things. Doctors do tell you to eat well. Doctors do tell you to exercise. Eating well and exercising and living a good, clean lifestyle is, that those are tools in a tool belt to stay well, healthy and well. And so are vaccinations.
So yes, I've been vaccinated as a Green Party candidate. It's a requirement. We during the pandemic, we followed public health policy, and as far as future pandemics, it's an irresponsible question. We have no idea what future pandemics will be like, so I cannot say what stance we would support on required vaccine mandates. However, what I can say is that we are the party that follows evidence-based research, the opinions of experts and lived experience, and if the public health mandate says, if the top doctors say to do something, that's what the Green Party will support.
Thank you. We are now question 8. It will be Jed, Greg, Sylvia,
Sherry, and David. Project labor agreements, or PLAs, seem to be an effective tool to increase tradespeople, apprentices, and encourage a diversified workforce to support construction and improve outdated infrastructure. What is your view of PLAs? Jed.
You know, I personally am not knowledgeable enough to have an opinion on this, and I'm sure the Green Party does have a policy. If you're curious to know anybody who's in the audience, please email me. I will let you know. But what I can say is that we want to make a significant investment into funding for people to train for these trades. Everything in our platform is measured by whether it will increase the well-being of British Columbians, and having good quality jobs and a thriving economy will increase the well-being of British Columbians. So we do want to increase the funding for education for people to get into trades.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you. Unless you're in your mom's basement trying to crank out a Bitcoin, I think trades are the future. So we have to support trades. It is our future, and the young people are ready. They want to enter that force and make a difference for British Columbia.
Sylvia.
So government support in building public infrastructure is critical, and to do that, trades are the answer. So the BCNDP has increased the number of spots for training in trades. They've increased the incentives for people to go into the trades, and they have been investing heavily in building hospitals and schools and highways and bridges and all of the things that have been neglected in the last, you know, couple of decades, I think. Yeah, I think that's all I'm going to say about that. We support the trades, and we definitely want more of them. They're the best paying jobs out there right now.
Thank you. Sherry?
And the trades are having more people retire than they are having them replaced right now, and it is definitely something that we should be considering. But the other thing that we need to consider is, what's the difference between the trades in BC and the trades in Alberta? Why do so many British Columbians go to Alberta to work the trades? And those are questions that we need to be answering. You know, the affordability of living here and the price, the paychecks that people are getting, there's a big difference, and we need to address that.
David.
We have to look at all options in order to get more people in the trades. Critical occupations are necessary for a thriving economy. So I believe that you should look at all programs and all incentives in order to get more people working specifically in trades, but in all occupations in this province. Thank you.
Question 9 will be Sylvia, David, Sherry, Jed, and Greg. How will Salmon Arm and the Shoe Swap continue to grow under your leadership, both population-wise and business-wise? How will you assist small businesses who are new to the scene and are still trying to establish a foothold? Sylvia?
Thanks for that question. So small businesses are the heart of our communities. We know that. Across BC and across Canada, small businesses invest in our communities as much as we invest in them. So it's really important that we keep them vibrant and productive. They are one of the main employers across the province and across our region, and they're a great place for people with years of experience, as well as people who are just coming out of high school and looking for a place to get started in their life. The NDP have cut the small business tax rate by 25% since they came in, which is meant to keep costs down for them. They've also frozen BC Hydro costs to keep those down, and they've also raised the limit for MSP premium, the employer paid health tax, that's what it's called. Sorry about that. So they've raised that.
Thank
so
you,
that
Sylvia.
That is your businesses time. Don't have to pay that.
And David.
Anybody who's read my bio will see that small business is one of my passions. Far too long, I've seen businesses come and go in the shoe swap, and they come in, they do not succeed, they leave. What we have to do is we need to cut taxes, we need to cut regulations. We have to cut the red tape and make it easier for businesses to succeed in this province, and especially in the shoe swap.
Again, we got to come back to accountability and transparency. You know, we're looking at a government who shut us down, divided us, you know, prevented, shut, you know, bankrupt our small businesses, and with no accountability whatsoever. And, you know, we keep giving them tax money, but we certainly do not know where that money is going. And then we get the same elected officials who want us to reelect them. And I mean, they didn't get their paychecks affected like we did. And I think it's time that we address it by doing an audit of what the government's doing.
As a small business owner who has friends who have small businesses, I can speak to this. I have heard the same thing from them as the party has heard from the small business leaders in the province, which is that what small businesses are asking for is help with the labor force. So we want to use an evidence-based approach and make sure that we take care of the basic needs of workers, because that's how we can allow small businesses of any size to thrive. So we will invest in education, healthcare, affordable housing, public transit, and a strong social safety net. So specifically, we'll provide direct support to business, which is something that I've received as a small business owner in the past, and it's been very helpful. Grants, tax incentives, and low interest loans. And we want to ensure that there's equitable access to resources and training. And we will make partnerships, prioritize partnerships between local governments and small businesses so that they have a fair chance against big businesses.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you. Yes, growth in the shoe swap. Jed's right. It's going to come down to labor and manpower, and that will be a lot of what dictates the success of a small business. I'd like to thank Sylvia for pointing out that there's been three cuts by the NDP to support small business. I just wish that she would come up with about 19 or 20 of more cuts from the 30 that they had in the last 7 years.
We're on to question 10. Will be Sherry, Jed, Greg, David, and Sylvia. Deaths from drug overdoses are at an all-time high. BC Emergency Services paramedics responded to 33,654 calls in 2022 and 42,172 in 2023. With the current policies clearly not working, what would be your plan to help the crisis?
Well, first of all, there's no such thing as safe supply. And we need to be addressing how this drug addiction is getting out there, and how the homelessness has occurred in the first place. They did a study looked into it and found out that since the safe supply's been out there, the deaths have tripled, and yet they want to give more safe, some more drugs without a prescription. So we need to get back to health and wellness and understand why people are doing drugs to begin with.
Thank you. Jed?